Good afternoon. I would like to thank the organizer for invitation. So I'm going to talk about quantum machine learning in more broader sense. So like the focus would be on meta learning and quantum state classification. Basically, I'll open with introductory notes on near-term quantum computing devices. What are the opportunities and challenges in using them for potential quantum applications? And then I'm going to go over overall broader view of quantum machine learning in gate model. And then I'm going to focus on two particular applications of quantum state discrimination classification, and also meta learning approaches for parameterized, basically programming quantum circuits using recurrent neural networks. So the question that is personally drives my research is that what is the most fundamental resource for computation and learning according to known laws of physics? And so, you know, I was driven by original insights from Feynman and earlier work in 90s. So I want to briefly review this kind of a little bit of history for people who haven't been focused on quantum computation, is that after like almost 30 years, what's going on and why we are still, you know, just programming handful of qubits, and where has been the progress? So beyond the first proposals for using a quantum system to simulate another quantum system, which is makes sense considering exponential computational power you need to simulate quantum system. For first 10 years after that proposal was fairly primitive quantum algorithms like Dojo's algorithms and some quantum crypto systems like BB84 algorithm by Charles Bennett. And things changed after the Shor's algorithm for factoring. And for a period of 20 years, we had pretty advanced development in quantum algorithm, theory of fault-tolerant quantum correction. But the hardware developments were very basic, mostly experimental at the you know, physics labs. And things, I think, changed since we launched our lab, especially bringing John Martinez from UC Santa Barbara to our team. And it seems that we are in a different era that is very advanced hardware development, but we are looking at early quantum applications. And I tell you why, you know, you have to think about more of a quantum application than necessarily scalable, like a provable algorithm. And there is a case actually that you can even commercialize these devices, although there is no asymptotic guarantee for performance. And I would argue that you have to combine a quantum processor with classical infrastructure because they're going to be very small and noisy, basically. So this is an outline of our research at Quantum AI Lab. Basically, what we are looking for to build the smallest size of, you know, processor that can show some considerable computational, you know, prefactor, you cannot call it a speed up, in a sense of what the has been called as quantum supremacy or quantum advantage, which is a direct brute force simulation of the circuit becomes intractable. And that's the only place that you can think about it is a random circuit. Like basically if you, generate random circuit, a quantum system is the best to reproduce itself. And there is no known algorithm that allows you to simulate it. If the device is noisy, so this is this axis is limiting basically the error rate for the machine. And if you have more than one person error, basically the quantum coherence is such it's such like a local phenomenon that you can use tensor network you know, ansatz to simulate the system for any size. And of course, if the system is too small, you can simulate it no matter how much coherence you have. So it it is expected that for certain range of, like, you know, you could say around 50 to, you know, a few hundred, that you could see quantum coherence if your gate fidelity is sufficiently high, like 3 nines, to be able to do something with them. And I want to say, like, we don't know at all if there's going to be any speed up or basically any advantage here for an application. Even if there is, there's going to be a big gap between these machines and a fault tolerant quantum computer. So no matter what, if we get application here which is relevant or not, there's a huge chasm that for a long time, you know, until you have fault tolerant quantum correction, things you can run these algorithms that they have provable speed up. I'm going to mention some of the quantum machine learning algorithm later. But the things that I'm interested here is, like, for a space-time volume that is finite, can you do something interesting? There are a few good candidates, is like a, maybe quantum-assisted optimization or quantum machine learning. I would say quantum simulation is also in principle possible, but it all depends on your gate fidelity. So I want to mention that this kind of quantum supremacy frontier or horizon is only applicable for a brute force simulation of worst case instances, which is random circuit. And it doesn't mean, even if you do that, it doesn't mean anything for any quantum application that we know. So it doesn't mean that you get a speed up on quantum machine learning or optimization. So no one has been able to demonstrate it. Even if you go beyond these limits, there is a use for the machine. Especially, the problem is that the machine are going to be small, noisy, and very expensive to query. And that connects to this kind of notion of why you need to develop meta-learning algorithms. So can we use these machines in any meaningful way? To see this, I want to emphasize something that I think this workshop people are aware of it, but I want to emphasize that, you know, of course, there is a direct connection of machine learning and optimization. Basically, these are two different sides of same coin, in heuristic, at least, machine learning. But there is a, you know, and this, there is the many-body physics with optimization connections well known since the 80s. You can map any NP-hard problems to, like, a low energy states of many-body Ising model. And there is this connection recently, and there have been a lot of interesting talks in this event on connection of machine learning and many-body physics. There are various tools that physicists develop, and we need to look at them again in this context. And just want to say that I'm giving another talk at KITP next week on using tensor network for discrete optimization. Basically, we can solve any hard problems that have been programmed on DWAG in linear time. Basically, we can solve like 100 million low energy states in single run of algorithm. And that's fully classical. And why, you know, I'm working on this kind of algorithm, like the classical tensor network one, is to build ultimately hybrid systems. So in a HPC kind of perspective, is that you can, in future technologies, as you go beyond Moore's law, which is already saturated, you can either improve the technology going beyond CMOS or change the architecture. And quantum computing is a radical way of doing it, but you don't have to go that radical. You can just change the architecture still using CMOS technology. And there is a lot of computing power, and you can combine it, you know, ultimately, if the quantum machine are available, you can put it on top of those classical, I would say, physics-inspired infrastructure. So let's look at the quantum machine learning as one potential candidate for quantum computers. As you know, there are three main features of a machine learning algorithm. It's representation power, optimization, and generalization. And you could think that if you use a quantum machine, you can improve on any of this or any combination of this using quantum fluctuation or quantum resources. So is that possible? I want to say that there are, like, when you hear about quantum machine learning, the people are talking about completely different things, and they just use the same, you know, language. There, you can consider machine learning to two different distinct classes. Is that when you have a classical model and you use quantum optimization, people call this quantum machine learning, but the model is classical. So you can use, like, for example, a quantum annealer sampling for optimization or sampling, and this is like connects to quantum Boltzmann machine, or you can use QAOA, this kind of, which I'm going to talk about it later. But in the quantum models of machine learning, this is more, you know, radical and more really quantum. It's just the model itself is quantum, and it's not like you just improve the optimization. The first class is basically trying to develop quantum models, and using the fact that quantum computers do linear algebra for a living, just to do that operations faster. And these are a few algorithms that I worked on them quite a few years ago, around 2013. And that actually triggered a lot of research in this quantum machine learning algorithm. But there are, more recently, people are looking at quantum Hamiltonian learning, which is like the quantum Boltzmann machine, you know, D-Wave, for example. There are some people who are actually directly quantizing classical neural networks. This is, you know, it could be in principle interesting, but usually they lead to huge overhead. More recently, in 2018, you know, people just try to parameterize a quantum circuit similar to this QAOA and just try to learn those parameters. And this is kind of, I'm going to focus on those. Just want to say that, you know, I mentioned that there is no known speed up for near-term devices, but for fault-tolerant quantum machines, there are lots of algorithms that claim certain speed ups up to exponential for several algorithms like PCA, support vector machine. And I should mention that there are a few things that you should pay attention, that these algorithms relies on some subroutines, and these subroutines are very expensive to operate. So usually a lot of this algorithm, they rely on this HHL algorithm for solving linear equations, and a lot of them strongly, heavily depends on QRAM, and QRAM doesn't exist. And basically all these operations are very expensive, needs on the order of 10 million qubits, okay? So, basically you need a fault tolerant quantum computers. And this is interesting that it's always 10 years away. If you ask, you know, I remember at 2000, the people claimed it's 10 years. At 2010, it's still 10 years away. And even now, they never, so that's a lower bound, not the upper bound. So if you invest in a quantum startup, pay attention to that. So let's have just an example of this algorithm, because this is not the focus of the talk, but I just want to show how they work. This is for parameter estimation, basically, you can think about just finding the diagonal elements of an unknown density operator, and you have like an n copy of it. So this is an algorithm I worked with Seth Lloyd and Patrick Carpentrost 5 years ago. So that was a kind of an algorithm that you can think that it uses very fancy quantum algorithmic subroutine, like inverse Fourier transform, phase estimation, and the swap trick for basically exponentiating a non-sparse but low rank matrix, so the efficiency comes if it is low rank, but it could be non-sparse, so you can efficiently simulate it and do a phase estimation. So basically you create a Hamiltonian from a density operator because it's Hermitian, and you can basically use this trick, control swap trick, to do this. And then you map this original tensor product states to this entangled states, which this the eigenvectors and eigenkits of the density operators are encoded here. And you can just measure it, and it's like log of D. If you want to do classical PCA on the density operator would be on the order of d cubed, so this is log d, so it's exponential speed up. This is actually provable speed up for quantum data. If you have a classical, actually, density operator, you need a QRAM to prepare it. And that we don't exist, but we don't know how to build it, at least, as of today. Okay? So that's an example of like this kind of more of a single-shot approach. So I would think that quantum machine learning is very useful for parameter estimation of quantum system. And usually you can consider two orthogonal axes. One is that represent the experimental configuration. The other one is the number of shots, like the number of repetition, you know, that you need to do to build the statistics. And in quantum tomography, usually like a standard and quantum state process tomography, you are here. So it's exponentially large in both number of experimental configuration and repetition. And a lot of work has been done in bringing down the number of experimental configuration, and you can do in basically in one configuration and do one, you know, basically single shot measurement, but that's kind of too much to ask. It's probably, as you've heard in the previous talk, it's much better to use machine learning techniques to do that. And a general scheme to approach this kind of general class of parameter estimation, state discrimination, and I would say process estimation would be to use variational quantum algorithms. And that's just basically, at the simple level, is just an iterative algorithm that there's a CPU and QPU and they exchange information. CPU, classical algorithm, provides a suggestion for the parameter, and the quantum processor, just all it does is just evolve, unitary operation or, a CP map if it is open. And then you're measuring a Hamiltonian, which is you could be your cost function or any observable of interest in quantum chemistry. And basically, this is kind of the routine. And you can think about this as a quantum neural network. Basically, the way it's kind of a semantic thing, but it makes sense. You can say that each cycle of the gates of these rotations, you can consider as one layer of a deep net. And so you have like, for a shallow circuit, you could have 10, 20 cycles, which is on the same depths of a typical neural network. And you can see you can apply it to this kind of general task. And of course, for a lot of problems, you have like, on the order of thousands of millions of parameters, and the chip are going to be tiny in the size. So one way to think if they could be potentially relevant to put them at the end of a deep learning stack to basically combine like a classical and quantum neural nets. So let's see an application in quantum state discrimination. This is one of the simplest things you can think about doing. It's like, a very important primitive is that in quantum mechanics that you cannot distinguish non-orthogonal quantum states. That's at the core of many protocols, crypto systems, as well as, basically relates to no-cloning theorem. So, teleportation, a lot of quantum communication protocols. It's at the heart of quantum repeaters for purification of states. And so there's no general method to do this. And so we thought that if we're setting up a universal discriminative networks, that using machine learning to basically train a particular measurement, which I call it to be like a POVM. So basically, the idea is this, for a two state, it's very simple to see. We have two states that are non-orthogonal. If you want to measure it, one strategy is to choose an orthogonal basis. And if there's a click here, you say this is psi 1. If it's a click in phi 2, you say it's psi 2. But you can never be certain because, So you can never be certain because there is some non-zero overlap between them. But so in any outcome, you have some errors. But there is another strategy which uses a POVM, and it says that, you know, I don't want to make second guess like this decision I make. I want to be sure, and sometimes then the price is to have inconclusive outcome. If you want to use a projective measurement for the two states, you can choose one orthogonal access to one of the states. So if you get a click here, it's definitely it doesn't belong to this. It's definitely PSI 2. But that's not very efficient. The most efficient way, it's always on a POVM or generalized measurement is optimal, is to put an inconclusive outcome right here in between, and then just having orthogonal accesses for PSI 1 and PSI 2. So a click here is definitely PSI 1, a click here is definitely PSI 2. And you can see it's mathematically can prove a POVM is always optimal. The problem is that setting up this POVM, even for four or five, like a states with like four or five qubits, it's intractable. It's a very hard problem to find this optimal POVM. So, and the other thing is that in practice, you never know the exact input states. They are coming from a distribution. They're not sharp. It's not either this state or that state. They are, in, you know, if you have like a two orthogonal state, you send them through some noisy channel. They come from a distribution based on, you know, the polarizing channel you have. So the best way to set it up, to parameterize it. So basically, so we parameterized in it, like a work that I did with UCL, collaboration with UCL in London, which is we parameterized the non-orthogonal states by density operator in this form, which this is the alpha is a distribution that you get, like you sample it with parameter AI from the alpha I. And this is like a, you know, you can expand it as like over or some bases. And then, but these are like non-orthogonal states. So we set up a machine learning strategy, simple supervised learning. But the thing is that we set up the cost function to be motivated from theoretical insight in a state discrimination. Which is, you know, basically all you want to do is to minimize the errors. So one minus the probability of success is failure, so you want to minimize that. But the regularizer we added to have representing basically two different type of errors. Error that are from a minimum error strategy and the inconclusive outcome. So this allows us to, by changing the alpha parameter, to interplay between two different extreme quantum measurement strategy that exists, which is a minimum error discrimination, a PVM, S1 projective measurement versus a POVM. So the circuit looks like this in abstract way. Basically, actually, this is a layer-wise learning. The way we do it is a stack of POVM. You know, of course, you in the first layer, you can do a linear kind of transformation like that. Whenever you do measurement, basically you introduce nonlinearity because in the parameters are in the exponent. When you measure it, you get the square of it. And so you have this kind of a truly a nonlinear quantum neural networks. So this is an example of for like a two qubit system, which is the simplest case. You can see the state PSI 1 and PSI 2 and 3, which is our mixed state. And if the parameter A and B are non-zero, you have like some overlap in the third component. So that's kind of a simpler case of this, which is like you have two fixed mixed state and one pure state that is parameterized by A. And so basically we used like a supervised learning techniques to with, you know, a gradient-based stochastic optimization to find this optimal POVM. This is the actual data. I should tell you that this is an experiment that actually I did when I was in my master program. So I was very familiar with these kind of states and how difficult it is to implement it. This was actually the first physical implementation of a POVM. So we could find something very similar to this optimal, you know, this was close to an optimal performance theoretically predicted. So you have to compare this yellow one with this gray. And they, you know, so the machine learning, so this is kind of from a distribution, which was a Gaussian around one of the variable parameter around 0.25. And fixed in the other, for the mixed state, for the density operator was fixed. So the mixed state was fixed and pure state parameterized, but also we had parameterized version of both mixed and pure states. And in all cases, we could train a network for this system size to do the state discrimination. So one thing is to pay attention is that probability of inconclusive, and this is a probability of error for, you can see there is a trade-off, a Pareto optimization forms here. And these are the theoretical, optimal theoretically value that you can actually analytically do for these small systems. And you see that here, you get a fairly close performance to the optimal value. The error is never zero here because the states are not given like as a fixed set of states. They are from a distribution. So you can never make the error to be basically zero. That's just not possible. So we did this for various different overlap of input states, and in all cases, you could find a strategy to have like a fairly good success probability if the overlap were small, like around 80%. And you could keep the errors as fairly small to a few percent. And basically the trade-off you pay with the inconclusive outcome if the overlap, this is like an overlap becomes considerable. And this is a very small overlap between the two mixed states that you have. So there are quite a few different applications for this. You can use this kind of scheme for building a structured receiver for quantum imaging sensing metrology, for quantum repeaters in communication systems. Also, you can use this for quantum secret verification. I am doing a collaboration with MIT. We actually have an optical implementation of this. And also you can use this for generative adversarial networks to use it as a discriminator network. So now I want to go to how much time I have?
4 minutes.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to discuss the meta-learning aspect of quantum secret learning. If you go back to the variation of quantum algorithms, there is, you know, of course, the CPU. All it does like a stochastic optimization. And you can do this with various techniques like SGD, ADAM, or momentum-based optimization. Or if the cost function doesn't have explicit form, so it's like a black box, or if it is too noisy, you can use other techniques that are designed for black box optimization, like Nelder-Mead or a Gaussian process, which is an example of Bayesian optimization. So why this is important? Because for quantum system is actually quantum oracles are inherently noisy. So it's very hard to write a good closed form to calculate the cost. And very expensive to query a quantum oracle. And if you want to do classical simulation of it, you know, of course, it's very hard beyond certain size. And there's additional things is that recently in our team, actually, it was shown that for random secret initialization, there is exponential inefficiency because basically you have vanishing gradient. The energy landscape is very flat, much worse than classical neural net. So how can we overcome these issues? So one thing that you can think about doing is the meta-learning approach, which is recently getting a lot of attention in classical machine learning community. And one advantage is that if you set up a meta-learning, it might be possible to actually train the networks using a small-scale simulation, and then just make, you know, basically, and then build a test set for a larger scale on the actual chip. So just a brief review on classical meta-learning for people who don't have background on this. So basically, you can consider three different classes of meta-learning approaches that, or you know, you can call it learning to learn. Is the first class is the structured learning, is that you want to improve the representation that you have. Like this is depends on the kind of correlation you have in data. So it could be a convolutional neural net, or it could be fully connected layers. But it's very good to, if you can have a system to find that structure via algorithmically, but instead of like having human experience. The other one is hyperparameter tuning. This is related to this kind of improving the optimization to reduce the iterative process during the learning. And especially it's very crucial if you have black box optimization when the cost function is not differentiable, too noisy, and very expensive to evaluate, and you see that fits the bill for the quantum systems. Most important class, I would say, is transfer learning, is that you have multitask learning, is that you want to develop, and this is related to this kind of MAML, which is model agnostic meta learning, which is you develop a deep net over multitask, so you have like many different tasks, you have a few samples of each task, and you just do it over those. And then instead of like picking up one task and super, you know, over optimize over that task and have poor generalization over other, you know, tasks that are usually varying in time. So basically, these are very applicable when you have a stream of data, so data is changing so fast. And in that case, you can see that recurrent neural net would be a very good candidate. And in particular, long short-term memory meta-learnings can capture both short-term knowledge and long-term knowledge. And the most important feature is potentially being able to train a quantum system using a classical simulator and then test it on the hardware. So this is, to see the connection with recurrent neural net, you can actually unroll the variational quantum algorithms. So to unroll it, you can see that there is, you can different iteration of the algorithm between two solvers, you can just like print it in a space, is that in each run, the CPU is getting inputs from the previous memory of the optimization. The input parameters and previous measurement and just pass it to CPU, the QPU or the quantum hardware, and this calculates the expectation of this observable and give new candidates. This is the estimate of the Hamiltonian, expectation value of Hamiltonian, and then you pass the new parameters and the new like state of the CPU to the next one. And you can see that this is very similar to a LSTM construction. So basically, you can develop recurrent neural nets with this kind of like a hyperparameter phi that captures the optimization over this basically procedure. And for the loss, what you want is something that is a difference between the, you know, so what you want to minimize is that you want to encourage exploration versus exploitation. So one thing is to try to minimize this function, basically trying to try new things to improve over the best minimum that you observe over all time. Basically, the optimization is looking at the entire history, not the final cost function at the final iteration. Versus if you don't use this kind of, you know, LSTM, it's just you're always looking at the last iteration only to do variational changes in your hyperparameter. So to apply this, one important algorithm for shallow circuit is QAOA, which is developed by Eddie Farrie and collaborator at MIT a few years ago. And basically, it's a like approximate algorithm, and it's a variational one, so you have the CPU, QPU. You have a cost function, it's a classical Hamiltonian, and then you have a drive, which is a class, you know, it's another term which doesn't commute with the classical Hamiltonian. Classical Hamiltonian could be a noisy model, like a Sherrington-Kirkpatrick model for high-dimensional spin glasses, for example. And this could be just a trivial superposition of all states. You can see this is very similar to an adiabatic quantum algorithm, which you start with a, from a superposition of everything, and you just go adiabatically dial this parameter theta, sorry, tau. So you go from initial Hamiltonian to the the problem Hamiltonian or the cost Hamiltonian. And this is kind of a continuous time evolution. Of course, you can trotterize that, and then you get a trotterized simulation of the adiabatic algorithm. And the QAOA is inspired from that, you know, trotterization, which is like you can say, like, I just roughly do this kind of steps, and in large P, this is approaching this kind of, you know, full simulation of the continuous time evolution. So this is the result for performing basically meta learning on variational algorithm for QAOA in two different problem classes. It's a Maxcod and Ising. The difference is, you know, you can consider Maxcod is just a pure Ising model of this. This is all the GIJs are one. That's your Maxcod, you know. I mean, the computational problem is very easy to understand too. It's just you have a graph, you want to find two subgraphs that you can, if you cut over the links, you maximize the number of cuts between a subgraph and the complementary part. And basically, it becomes the pure Ising model. And this is becomes a disorder. When you say Ising, it's a disorder in SK model, Sherrington Kirkpatrick model. And so what we did is that we use this LSTM for up to 10 iteration, and it could bring down the relative errors based on the cost function that I defined substantially low compared to any other techniques. This NM is like, you know, Nieldermeade is like a greedy algorithm for black box optimization. This one is Gaussian process regression. And so what we could do is that for Maxcod, it looks very good to use the recurrent neural net for initializer to sample, to provide suggestion for the parameter to then greedy algorithm could, you know, basically prepare it in a Bayesian of attraction of a very good local minimum. So then you can just optimize over that with a simple greedy algorithm. So it was not efficient to just run that for too many queries. So it just dives down immediately, and then you could just pass it to as a seed to Nieldermeade algorithm. And if you had a random seed, for example, which is the green one, it was not performing as well. And the difference is huge for the Sherrington Kirkpatrick, is much bigger. We also did this for the Hubbard model. If I have time, I can present that too. But basically, the key things is that the number of iterations reduced from 1,000, you know, or 100 at least to 10. So two or three order of magnitude improvement in the iterations. And is that we always, you know, there is a concentration over the parameters that you optimize. So we always did it on a smaller system. So this was like around 6 qubits, and we tested it over 12. So it's, the idea is that in this trotter, basically in this expansion, the computational complexity grows with P, not the size of system in this parameterization. Basically, the number of parameters are not increasing with the number of system, but with the P. So the number of terms in your factorization. So basically, this is kind of results for QAOA. This is, we have a paper in preparation. Hopefully we finish it by next week. I should tell you that this the lead authors here, Guillaume and Michael, did most of the work. And they were my intern at Google, but they're PhD students. Actually, Michael is an undergrad at Waterloo. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's open for discussion. Okay.
Hi, so very interesting. So in this meta learning approach, do you need to compute the gradient of the objective? So this is the thing I didn't get from your description. So at some point you need to compute the gradient of your objective function, right?
Yes.
So how do you propagate that somehow in the circuit? So do you measure the gradient in the circuit or?
So this is a...
Okay.
This is like a circuit that demonstrate the, so basically you can consider the you can backprop the gradient over time. Basically, that's how you do it in LSTM, is that you can print time in a space and consider it as like a more big feed-forward deep nets, and you just backprop it normally as.
So and then the related question is, if you use the gradient to optimize that thing, how would that perform compared to the meta learning?
But the gradient is for the parameter of the hyperparameter phi of the, not the actual parameter of the true optimization. So it's a different optimization to learn the original one. So what I'm saying is that it's not. So this was originally, maybe I should mention that this was originally proposed by DeepMind team. So the learning to learn without gradient descent by gradient descent is that you want to do a learning when you cannot calculate gradient.
So you don't need the gradient of the objective.
Yeah, it's not the actual objective.
Oh, I see.
It's over the loss function defined, the meta learning loss function.
I see. Okay.
Talking about the similarity of QoA and adiabatic optimization here. So will QoA has the same bottlenecks that adiabatic quantum computation has, like exponentially closing gaps when you're doing the optimization?
I don't think it has the same bottleneck, but it has a different bottleneck. So basically, you're saying what happens that when adiabatically you're closing, you know, gap is vanishing? Is the QoA works there at the? This is a very good question. Basically, what happens is that you can consider QoA as a non-adiabatic evolution. So basically, it finds variationally you find a shortcut in adiabaticity. So it's not necessarily because the gap is exponentially closed, you are in trouble inherently. The thing becomes that in worst cases you expect that variationally it takes an exponential iterations to find it. So nobody believes that this is going to scale, at least for the worst cases, you know, in polynomial, or be able to find the solutions approximate hard MP, you know, worst cases of MP hard in polynomial time. So it breaks down for a different reason, is that the variationally, either the optimization becomes too expensive, or the iteration steps becomes too expensive. Basically, it means that you have to go to larger P and becomes. Basically, you're just doing a simulation of the adiabatic evolution itself. So it, but to my knowledge, it hasn't been demonstrated, the failure. I think there was a work by Matt Hastings a few years ago. But yeah, it's a good study to do.
In the plot that you showed comparing different methods for QAOA, you had this Nelder-Mead and also the RNN. This one. So do you train all of them on smaller instances and then test them on larger instances, or you just train the LSTM on a small instance and then use it for larger instances?
No, we do the same for all of them.
So all of them are trained on a 6-qubit instance and then checked on 12-qubit?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually had a question about that plot as well, because it was not, with respect to what are you computing the relative error?
Oh, the relative error is renormalized error from the basically this kind of the best minimal function that you had compared to basically you're minimizing the expectation value over the mean. Here in this case becomes that because we have the actual solver, we know the exact the lowest energy.
So took the exact result.
Yeah. I mean, okay. These are small systems, so we could.
Okay, that was not clear. Maybe I missed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I should say that, you know, we did this maybe because there is time for this question, so I can insert this here. We did this for a variational quantum eigen solver for Hubbard model, which is, has this Hamiltonian. I think people here are familiar. So you can do this kind of factorization. And for this, there was an interesting thing that was not as clear in the QIOA case, is that if you add a noise to the measuring the expectation values from a Gaussian distribution, there is this ideal situation, and this is with noise, is that when you do the seed with the LSTM, basically it's there is much more robustness to noise than the other techniques. And there is also a distribution of basically distances of various seeds that you find. So LSTM is comparing to the best seed, optimal one. It's the distance is smaller for LSTM versus the for various different application that we did versus other techniques. So here the distribution from mean is also pretty wide. So there is a concentration so there is a paper by Eddie Fahey and co-workers that shows there is a concentration for QIOA where once you learn when you choose a graph and you sample from a random distribution of that graph, if you learn the hyperparameter on a few instances, it does not change over a lot of other basically instances that you apply. So there's a good concentration. And we saw that here too. So basically that work was inspired from this numerics.
Okay. We have one more question here.
So a question about noise and the max cut and the icing. So is it clear that doing QAOE is robust to noise as compared to say quantum annealing on the same problem? Is it worth it?
I would say all variational algorithms are robust to systematic errors because you variationally you just go around them. Basically, if a theta is theta prime, it doesn't matter. If every time systematically you just do an over rotation, you are going to find basically the algorithm is just going to adjust automatically. It's built into the algorithm. But if it is random noise, I don't think there is any study that shows that there is that much more robustness to annealing.
And if you compare to quantum annealing, which is known or arguably is known very susceptible to decoherence and errors, is there a comparison between?
Oh, decoherence here is much more severe. I mean, okay. This is a gate model. In annealing, at least you are if you are doing, because of the gap between many-body ground state and excited state, there is more natural robustness to that kind of error. Okay. So they have different robustness, I would say. Okay. But I do not claim that QAOA, it's scalable or anything like that. As I told you at the beginning of my talks, I think you should be very careful about quantum machine learning or optimization and shallow secret to claim any asymptotic behavior. First of all, the hardware would not scale without error correction itself. So, but I think even algorithmically that result doesn't exist.
Were there questions I missed? Well, maybe I had one, a wild one. You had in the first slides this quantum supremacy 2019 ? So it's kind of soon. So what would be your guess, in which of these or maybe other problems we will have a quantum computer doing something classically we cannot?
As I mentioned, I think outside of random circuit, it would be very hard to even argue, make a very rigorous argument that if you do some kind of, implement some quantum application or algorithm on a fixed size device, it's very hard to establish a speed up. Also, random circuits, it comes from a simple argument of it's at the quantum chaos kind of limits. And it's just the entanglement is very, it's supported over the entire input, which is that whatever number of qubits you have. So if they're, based on certain fidelity of the gates, you need to simulate the full system in a brute force fashion, and that should break down around 50 qubits or so. As far as the experimental progress in our lab, I cannot say anything at the moment. You will hear it when we have, we are making good progress. That's all I can say.
Okay.
Thanks.
Are there more questions in the meantime? Well, if not, then we can take a little break and start the next talk at 3:00.